Hi everyone, I'm Steph Adusse, and this week on Black All Year, we're turning up the spotlight with none other than the queen of being seen, Jenny Kovacs. Jenny is a powerhouse speaker, mentor, coach, and businesswoman. She is a visibility specialist on a mission to help professionals show up and shine. She's appeared regularly on the BBC, spoken to audiences across the globe, and is the creator of the Visibility Activator System, which is a game-changing framework built on five powerful pillars that help you raise your profile without selling your soul. So whether you're tired of being the best-kept secret in your industry or want to step into the spotlight without feeling like a show-off, Jenny's here to show you how. So let's talk mindset, visibility, and how to make your mark unapologetically. Hi, welcome to Black All Year, Jenny. It's really lovely to be able to actually talk to you because we've been connected online for quite a while and we met, it's pre-pandemic, I think, when we met face to face, which now is 5 years ago easily, if not more. So lovely to meet you online. And Jenny, you are, I could remember you had a title. I was trying to think, what's the title? And then I spotted it. The queen of being seen. So tell us about what makes you the queen of being seen and about you and what you do.
So this is interesting. I often, even after like nearly 15 years, I still feel like I have to explain the queen of being seen. So let me talk about how that came about. When I started doing this officially in 2010, I was working with clients to help them really with like their presentation skills and if they were nervous about that kind of stuff. And very quickly afterwards, a lot of them would contact me and say, yeah, I'm definitely more confident and I'm doing A, B and C now. And then they said what felt like really random things. One of them said, oh, but I've just done this thing for Channel 4. I thought, really? And, oh, I've just been called into Parliament to do this thing. I was like, really? And it turned out that the confidence that they were kind of gaining, I guess, was having them being seen in lots of places. So I was in a mastermind group and a coaching group, and we were talking about this, and somebody said, oh, it's always good to have a name or something you're known for. And I said, but I haven't got one. And we were talking in our group, and I told them some stories of some of my clients, and they said, oh, so you're like the queen of being seen. Now, I'd love to tell you that I went, yeah, that's brilliant, that's excellent. But what I actually said was, this group was based in America, and I said, that might work in America. But if I go back to the UK and go into corporate settings or go into business settings and say, I'm the queen of being seen, they're going to think that I'm really arrogant. So I don't know. But I sat with it. So in the same way that someone says, oh, I'm the queen of doing A, B and C, that's how that came about. And the first time I remember being at a conference, it was a very kind of proper conference, and they introduced me as Jenny Kovacs, the queen of being seen. I've never had so many, like, you know, heads of banks and pinstripe suit wearing men come up to me and say, I really like the fact that you're the queen of being seen. That's excellent. So then I thought, well, I'm going to embrace it. And that's how it came about. So your listeners and your viewers might be thinking, but what do you do? So essentially, I specialize in visibility. I have to say that very specially, because for those of you watching on captions, it sometimes captures as invisible, which I definitely don't want. So I somehow, and I think it might unfold as we have this conversation, but somehow, it doesn't matter who the person is, who the brand is, what the product or service is. People can come to me and say, I really want it to be seen. And it's like something clicks in my brain, like a little Rubik's Cube. And I'm like, okay, for you, speaking, for you, writing, for you, have you tried this? Have you tried that? It's like I can extract these kind of this combination of the best way. Sometimes it's the people, but sometimes it's their product, service or value. I can create that to be seen. So after helping people with their visibility, I realized that, well, how can I help more and more people to do this, like at scale? So I, again, was working with a coach and worked with a mentor. And I thought that I had to hear every single person's individual story so I could bespoke something for them, which to a point is true. But what I also realized, and I'll happily share this with your audience as well, what I realized was that if I had thousands of people lined up in front of me, even though they're all unique and offer something very different, there were five really key steps, five really key pillars, if you like, of things that I would repeatedly ask them about, tell them to do, that was easy for them to repeat. In fact, the Visibility Vibe System, as it's now known, is so easy and so doable. I think people think, oh, that's too easy. I need to go and find the algebra of it, you know, the harder way to do it. So that's how all of this visibility work kind of came about. And there's another story behind how I realized that visibility was kind of my thing. But that's how it came about. And it's normally delivered through the Visibility Vibe System. So five key pillars that have you to be seen, have you been heard, have you been paid attention to? So you're able to sell yourself or your product, your service, your brand, or what you stand for quite easily. So that's a long answer to a short question.
Yeah, it's great. And I think it's interesting because I understand that initial reaction that you had to the Queen of Being Seen. And yes, in Britain, we are a bit more reserved and things, but there's something, I wonder, was it predominantly men that came up to you just from the way you were describing them?
At that particular conference, it was, but in honesty, it was, there were about 400 people in the audience. And at that time, and I've spoken for this organisation multiple times now, at that time, I reckon there were six women in the room.
Right.
Which was quite telling.
Because there's something to me that's almost synonymous about visibility and confidence.
Mm.
Even if that's not the reality, in people's brains, it's that visibility and confidence. So being bold enough to say the Queen of Being Seen kind of says, yeah, I'm there and I'm comfortable with that. And so it makes sense whilst that initial, ooh, that you might have felt because it was a label that was being applied to you. I completely understand.
Mm.
And I'm really curious about this thing about visibility and why it's so important. Because some people just say, well, I've got a product. The product will sell itself. Or, you know, I've got a service that should sell itself. So why is visibility important in the first place?
It's interesting because it actually connects back to what you were just saying about visibility and confidence. So let's just bust a myth here. A lot of people think that in order to take on a visibility specialist like me, that they have to be nervous about being visible, that they're not confident. And in fact, a high percentage of people I work with are men. So I'm not I work with women too. They are all really confident. But what happens is we all have a kind of crisis of confidence, and sometimes it can stop us and sometimes it doesn't. So my own crisis of confidence at the beginning was, I can't say that in England. Surely it won't fly. But it didn't stop me from using it. I still went on and did it. So there is a very kind of a big synergy between visibility and confidence and how they marry together. But how did I kind of make this connection, I guess? Before I started this business in 2010, I worked in financial services, and before that I worked in travel. So I did something that I think thousands, millions of people across the world do. I was working for, at the time, actually, it was the Abbey National, as it was. I was working for them and I just wanted career progression. But a big part of my role there was working in a mortgage unit, sexy mortgages, I know. And a lot of it included sales. And there were times where I would smash my sales target and they would give me other people's sales targets and I would smash those. And then there were other times where there were kind of different skill sets to be applied. And somebody noticed that I was good at teaching people things. I never really thought about it, but that's what they noticed. So then there was this kind of joining the dots moment. Years, like fast forward years, I worked for a commercial mortgage company. And while I was there, I quadrupled my salary. And I got promoted rapidly three times within the space of just 2 years. But I thought it was because I'd said to myself, well, I just want career progression now and I want to do it. What I didn't realise was all the things that I was kind of doing behind the scenes to make that happen would form later on, form at least parts of this visibility vibes thing that I would talk about. And if I'm honest, whilst it's great to say, oh, you know, I quadrupled my salary or I, you know, got promoted rapidly, the actual piece that made this piece work was the things that I didn't do, or the crisis of confidence that not only I had, but I noticed people around me behind the scenes would have, the so-called glass ceilings that people will hit. And I'm not about to gaslight anyone and say there isn't such a thing, because for many of us, there are, you know, they just are. It's how we find ways to navigate those and kind of get past those too. So my crisis of confidence happened after I did that. I went to go for another job, and my crisis of confidence actually meant that I took a 60% reduction in salary. Like, think about this logically. That's a lot to kind of, you know, dismiss or push to one side. And I think deep down, my crisis of confidence caused me to think it was a fluke, it was lucky, I can't do this again, I won't be able to do this again. So I have a really strong empathy with anyone I meet. And I've worked with some really successful people and brands. I don't kiss and tell even to this day, but I've worked with some really cool people doing brilliant things. And it's almost like if I can see them on the way to a crisis of confidence, or if I think they're kind of they're there, or they express that to me, it's almost like I know how to reach in and help them out of it again. When I realized that this, it almost felt like a life purpose thing. When I look back in my life and join the dots to even when I was a child, I started to see it almost like my life prepared me for this. So if I was in a boardroom and I was the only woman and woman of color in there, that actually made me stand out. So how could I use that for the benefit of me, for the benefit of them, for the benefit of the company or the industry? So I became curious in that and somehow found my way. So I think working with a coach and mentor back in 2010, it almost helped me to pull everything out of my brain and line it up so that it made sense, not just to me, but to other people too. So I could pick out this piece and be like, okay, here's what's going to work really well for you. Let's dive deeper into pillar five, or let's dive deeper into pillar one. So it feels like a happy accident, actually, but that's kind of how it all kind of came about.
Something that you said there triggers with something that a moment that I had. So when you were saying when you're the only woman or the only person of color in a room, you do stand out. And for me, when I was, it was the start of me dealing with imposter syndrome, and it was that thing of I think differently, I look different, quite often I'm a different gender, and I always stand out. And then I suddenly realized if you stand out, you're outstanding.
I love that.
And that little thing that clicked in my brain, and I thought, well, if I'm going to be outstanding, I'm going to be outstanding. So I think there is something about that, because you're right, quite often when you are particularly somebody who is black or brown, you are going to be seen.
Mm.
And you then have a choice about what you do about that, because some people will see that negatively and some people will see that neutrally and a few will see that positively. But you have a choice over what you choose to do with that being seen.
Mm.
But I think quite a few of us try to hide away because we're uncomfortable with being seen.
Yeah, I so resonate with that, because the point, and this is going to sound really late in my life, but the point that it really hit me was 2020, George Floyd, very publicly murdered, in my opinion, very publicly murdered, and the world changed. It did something to me. And I didn't actually ever watch the video. I almost felt like if I watch this, I'll be traumatized beyond belief. It made me question who I was, why I did things, what I was doing, how it benefited people. And one of the things, I mean, listen to how I speak. a lot of, especially Black women, but a lot of Black people will tell me that in very professional settings, people will say, oh, yeah, but you're not Black, are you?
Yeah.
As a compliment, meant as a compliment, and you're like, oh. And it's funny because I choose not to work in diversity, equity and inclusion, always like kind of pointing people out in the right direction, because there are people out there that do it with far more grace, I think, than I do. But, you know, when you just think, did you really just say that? I was confronted after George Floyd's murder of how I sound. How I sound is a product of me trying to fit in. It's taken me decades to sound like this. You know, somebody had commented that, oh my gosh, without a camera on, you couldn't tell what colour you are. You know, and these things are all kind of, I guess, well meant, but it really made me look deeper within myself. In a way, what masks am I wearing? How do I change my behaviour? How do I code switch? What do I do to do all of that? And it's funny because I come at you with kind of straightened extension hair with pink at the bottom of it, which people often think, gosh, and what, you really go into boardrooms and you work with execs and things like that? And they all accept it. But there was a lot of almost derobing of myself to realise the person I'd become, what I wanted to keep, what I wanted to throw away, what I wanted to incorporate moving forward, and in a way, what I wanted to make a stand for. And the thing that I will make a stand for all day, every day, is that whoever I'm speaking to, it's your voice matters. Even if you've been in places where people will kind of poo-poo you, I always talk about the look when people start at your feet and very slowly look up to your face and you're like, oh, okay, that's what we're going to do today. I think people's voices matter. And the thing that I find is that different people have different scales of being told that they don't matter, verbally or non-verbally. And this is why I talk about ceilings and things. There are glass ceilings. There are gender pay gaps. You know, there are injustices done against people with brown and Black skin. Just because somebody doesn't see life that way or see it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. So I like to share with whoever is in front of me. I love to share how they can almost overcome that, overstep that. But the thing is, in order to be able to do that, we have to talk about the things that are really difficult sometimes and really uncomfortable to say, even when somebody very well-meaning might say, but I don't see colour. I really don't see it. They need to understand what that means and unpack how that can even be dismissive to the person that hears it too.
Yeah. And I think that whole thing of you don't sound Black, it is really interesting, because what they're saying is that all Black people sound a certain way. And I think being somebody whose father is West African, there is a very different culture. I think people immediately think of the Caribbean culture and way of speaking. Very, very different. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I think about my code switching, it's Geordie. Because I was broad. I was really broad as a kid. And my mom called me a fishwife. I was so broad. But actually, I was taught to speak the Queen's English, because that was what my father had learned in Ghana. He'd learned English in a very regimented way, in which we in this country would never learn it like that. But there's this perception of there is a way that Black people speak. There is a way that Black people dress. There is a way that Black people wear their hair. There is a way. It's just a nonsense. But people say it to you and they're trying to say, I've discussed this before. It's this thing of you're accepted, you're included. But they say it in a way that's kind of like you're accepted and included despite the color of your skin. Because you're not like them, you're like us. And yeah, it's a really difficult thing. And I think acknowledging that happens, and that for people who are Black and brown, that is something that we have to deal with. I think for me, it's that. But if you then allow that to stop you being visible and stop you achieving what you need to achieve, even though you probably have to fight harder to get there, then that's a real shame because you're letting other people win and control you.
That's so true. And it's not the easiest of things to do. It's almost like some of the people that I speak to say, well, I almost need to pick my battles. And isn't it sad to think that for many of us, we go through life having to button it, mm-hmm. or feeling like we have to button it and not say something, feeling like we have to change our accent. I always say to people, if you're aware, and this to me is a good antidote to imposter syndrome, if somebody writes down all of the reasons why they think they shouldn't be doing the thing, those reasons actually become the reasons to do the thing.
Right.
Because I don't fit in, because my accent's different, because I haven't learned enough, because it's normally one gender or another gender, because, you know, and I think if we can see it and see what stops us, it does actually help. And for some people, like I say, it doesn't stop, it pauses them. Some people, it makes them determined. And in terms of this assumption that all Black people look, act, speak a certain way, I mean, think of how many continents and how many different people there are around the world. You know, my parents are Caribbean. They both come from Barbados and met over here. But even as a child, you know, we weren't allowed to say water, you know, the Queen's English, you know. And even then, the whole kind of colonialism from back in whichever island or country comes into play. And then the other thing that I think is really sad is I do speak to people who are of mixed heritage, and this feeling like, you know, I heard one woman say to me, but I'm too Black for the Black community and too white for too Black for the white community, too white for the Black community. So there was this feeling of no man's land. And although both my parents are Black, one of the things that I think I really struggled with as a teenager was this sense of identity. Because I was born and bred here in the UK, I'd hear all about the Caribbean from my parents. I didn't feel like I could be patriotic. I didn't feel like I 100% fitted in the UK, even though that's all I knew. And then when I remember going to Barbados, first time as a kid, when I was 7, my cousins laughing and going, but you sound funny. You sound like a newsreader. You know, you don't sound like a Bajan. So there was always this kind of feeling of no man's land. And I think what landed after the George Floyd was, okay, I need to sit with who I am, like 150%. And although I'd started to process that in kind of the years coming up, I think the conversations were the piece that played the most important part. Difficult or not, actually just starting to have the conversations and people realising what happened on a global scale is an important part of our identity, which therefore makes it easier for us to be even more visible. It's so important, and it's not something that people always connect the dots with.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just such it was a pivotal moment. I think, you know, if I look back, I just started... I was just about to start a new job in May 2020. So I just started at the beginning of May. And I'd started working with a coach. And one of the things that I'd said to my coach was that I was going to be far more visible and prominent in this role. And therefore, as a Black woman in the area that I live and in the charity sector. And one of the things I wanted to work through was, what did that mean, and how much of that did I need to bring to my ethnicity? Did I need to bring to my role and my kind of profile and things? And then George Floyd was murdered. And it was almost like I just almost went, I haven't got a choice. I do not have a choice in this at all. I did. I could have sat and hidden away, but I kind of didn't. And whether that was my personal values and ethics or whatever, or whether it was because people were pulling me into that, I don't know. But it was just, that was that changing point to me, that I remember sitting down with my coach and she kind of said, so do you want to explore this? And I kind of went, well, I think the do I want to bit is gone, but it's the what do I want to do with that now, that's the important bit. So yeah, really. And I've heard quite a few people talking recently with Kamala Harris's nomination about that being a changing point for a lot of people, So I don't think we've quite seen the whole repercussions of that yet.
No, we haven't. And it is a really important piece, because I think that moment in time, first of all, for me, I experienced so much trauma and I couldn't understand it. I thought, but I haven't seen the video. I was bursting into tears and I was checking in with my predominantly Black friends and saying, is everything okay? You know, are you okay? It felt really weird to me. I didn't know whether it was like the pandemic or anything else like that. And I thought, I'm not going to make excuses for how I feel. But I think what it did collectively for a lot of us, or people who identify as our allies, it may just say enough. Now, on a global stage, you can see something that's happening that can't be denied. Are you going to speak up about it or not? Yes, it was exhausting for many of us. I remember running a program just after that. For the first time ever in my career, I had to say, this is for white people only. Mm. Oh my gosh, I remember writing the page, but I really felt it in my body. It felt so alien to me, having to kind of segment it in this way. But it was visibility for difficult conversations, and it talked about race. Mm. And it was just things that I was sharing. I had to make it ironically, a really safe space, because I needed people to say what they really thought and what they really felt, and then kind of unpack that for them. But things like sharing, imagine that for all of your life, you look in a shop window and you see the shop dummy and the color of their skin isn't the same color as yours. Like, these are kind of very silent, unspoken ways that people are told, you're not enough, you're not included. It was like, and it sounds a funny thing to say, the light bulb moments that went off for so many people in that time were just amazing. So explaining things like flesh-coloured plasters and, you know, things for ballerinas, skirts and things like that, not that I ever did ballet. It was just, it almost seemed like this should be obvious. But I think the most important thing that came out of that period was our ability to speak about it, because without having conversations about it, like, how on earth can we even start to tackle this, dismantle this, or change it? So one of the things that I loved, if I can say that, about after that period, were there were people that said, you know what? I didn't realize I was racist, or I did realize I was racist, but I've actually changed my mind. I mean, that's change, right?
Exactly. I'm going to have you on another show, because one of the things that I'm coming more to is that what you did there, that leaning into some of those conversations and really getting curious about why people hold those views and where they come from.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, whilst you've got to call it out, the combative way is not bringing about change. It's actually bringing about further division. So I'm sure we'll get onto that. But I want to know about this visibility system. So what did you call it again?
It's the visibility vibe system. So here's what it means for people. Basically, it's called the vibe system because the five key pillars, vibes is actually an acronym for it. And what's really strange about it was I had to unpack what those pillars were first. And then when we laid it out with lots of post-it notes and scribbles and all that kind of stuff, I realised that for each pillar, I think it's spelled V-I-E-B-S, but that's going to be really hard.
it would have stayed like that for me because I'm rubbish at anagrams, so I wouldn't have got any further.
It was like, oh my gosh, this spells the word. If we change that, it spells the word vibe. So note to anybody who has got a tried and tested system, you might see people use words as acronyms. Don't be tempted, like, if you want your work to be visible and your work to be known or you to be known, don't be tempted to find a fancy word and then fit your work into it, because it kind of won't work for people. It won't work for you. Look at actually what you're doing and name it. And if it doesn't have a fancy name, don't worry about it. Let it be of ultimate service to other people. And I think in some way or some form, even from the days of the promotion and everything else like that, that's what people remember about me, whether it's in a boardroom or not. So without any further ado, if you've got pen and paper as you're watching this, like, pause right if you need to. Write the word vibes with an S down. So the first pillar is about our ability to be visible. Some of us have an ability to be visible, but we're looking to get to another level, another stage. Some of us feel nervous about certain elements of it. Visibility is your ability to be seen for who you are, like in an authentic way, to be heard in the way it's meant. So sometimes we have to work on our communication. Other times we might need to finesse it so that a point is made, not so that we sound different or sound the same. So underneath that first pillar, I actually have visibility itself, the ability to be visible, video, because it comes into so many things. It's not, I always joke, it's not just about, you know, TikTok, Instagram, I'm an influencer. It's not just about that. But video can be Teams meetings, can be Zoom meetings, can be pitches, can be online networking, as well as videos, reels, TikTok shorts and all of that. It's a really important way to communicate. And I've kind of been banging on about this since about 2012. It's a really important way for people to very quickly build a know, like, trust factor. So the other thing on that, and I feel like I should always say this first, but it's the vision. One of the things that has got messed up over the years in terms of vision is if you think about it as a goal, people will often set goals for themselves, but they'll still set it based on what others expect of them. So think of the glass ceiling, and think of the glass ceiling as a person of color. We will have ideas of what maybe our parents or the people that brought us up thought or think we should do. We'll have expectations of maybe the industry we're in, what they think we should do, or other people around us. So we kind of set a goal that isn't even based on what we really want. Or we set a goal that's a big hairy goal and scares us, and we rein it in. So you must have heard this over the years, even in board meetings. So what is it that you actually want to do? Well, it'd be good to do A, B, and C, but we can't do that because very quickly people start to unwind why they can't do something. I want to say be brave enough, be bold enough, even if you have to close your eyes and have that vision, even if it seems impossible. Close your eyes, have that vision, and let what you do when you're being visible stem from that vision. There's always somebody that does something first. I think Roger Bannister is the most overquoted person for that. He ran that 4-minute mile and, of course, showed everybody what was possible. So never be afraid of that vision. So first pillar, visibility, is V for visibility, video and vision. So the second pillar is all about either the impression that we leave or the impact that we make, i.e., what do you want people to say about you when you leave a room? How do you want to be perceived? And this is not about positioning ourselves for, you know, the awards and the applause. This is about positioning what we really feel, who we are authentically. And in that pillar, I tend to dive really deep in things like color psychology from a point of view of like the clothes we wear, the colours we wear, the things we do, if you want to turn up the influence, turn it down and all of that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of non-verbal stuff we can do. I do talk even more about the mindset of it, and not from a tricking people with tips, but really how to be in ourselves and how to think, as you said at the beginning, how to think differently in a way that's going to serve them and going to serve you. So second pillar, I, is for impact. The third pillar, B, actually stands for our biography. And I feel like I'm still learning on this. But one of the things is that people often overlook. So I realized this when I had my own kind of career progression. Our biography normally finishes up as a CV. Or finishes up as the story of me, Jenny. But actually, if we are selling an idea, a product, a service, a way of thinking, if you think about that as an entity, that has its own biography. So it's like the vibe system could be, yes, to be more visible, but actually the story of the vibe system is what can happen when we hit a crisis of confidence. And I want people to be able to kind of scale and skate over that crisis of confidence so that it serves them. So it doesn't always have to be, you know, in the entrepreneurial world, a lot of people will say, I was poor, living under a bridge, and then all of a sudden, here's my Porsche, here's my mansion, here's me. that is the story for some people, but not everyone's story. So B is the biography, which could be you or could be the product or service. E is around your energy, is around your vibe. One of the things that people sometimes inadvertently do when they come into my world, they like something I say or the way I say it. And then I see them almost like reproducing that in the world. The reason I get upset about that is because I'm like, no, ting, ting, ting. We want to find the real you. Come on out to play. People don't need to see me, you know, and as you, they want to see who you are. So our energy, like if we're stoic, be stoic. If we're like all over the place, be all over the place, like embrace it. And this idea that we're just one person, people say, be yourself, well-meaning, well-intended, but actually we are an amalgamation of different identities. And I really like playing with those identities so that people show more of who they are. And that really comes out too. So your energy. The other thing that I do want to say about energy on a very kind of basic sense is for some reason I see it more in cis women than men. But what I do see is burnout, the high percentage of burnout. Occasionally, you know, men burn out too, but I see it in a lot more women, a lot more cis women. So one of the things, oddly, that I've discovered over the years, I almost feel like I want to get some proper scientific data put behind it. One of the quickest ways that we can burn out is by doing something we really don't want to. Oh, well, I'm just going to do the job. I stay there for 5 years. It'll look good on my CV. Or, oh my gosh, I'm in this meeting and they keep saying these things and I really don't agree with it, but I'm going to be silent. You know, anytime we do that, it doesn't actually have to be for a long period of time. We will burn out mentally, physically, and everything else. So I'm a bit of an advocate for, like, I want to wave the banner to stop people burning out. Which also is strange because I'm not a burnout specialist, but if I see it, I tend to point people in the right direction for that. So V, visibility, I, impact, B, biography, E, energy, which brings us to S. Two things here. One is the way we speak about what we do. Again, nothing to do with how we sound or how we articulate or our accent or anything like that. I remember doing a talk at the... I keep going to say the O2, it's not at the XL. And one of my fellow speakers actually had and still has a stammer. And I absolutely loved that they were still able to speak, still able to do that. It's not about let's get rid of the stammer and now you go to speak. It's nothing to do with that. Speaking in a way where you embody what you're saying means that people feel the passion for what you do. And that can be as an employed professional, can be as an exec, can be as somebody, I keep saying working in the post room, but only certain people understand that. Now, don't they? I'm like, I'm aging myself here. It doesn't matter how junior or senior you are, being able to articulate what you need to articulate in a way that influences people around you is so important, because the other S under that is how we sell ourselves. And quite often people will say, yeah, but I'm not selling a product or service, or I'm not part of the sales team for this company. I'm part of marketing, or I'm part of HR, or I'm part of, you know, the office operations. We always sell ourselves. And I know this sounds creepy, but people are always watching us. People are always paying attention. So if you are able to be yourself and sell yourself simultaneously, when you think that people aren't watching and when you think that people don't need to hear it outside of the interview, then that will have like have reams and reams of benefits for you. So vibes is the are the five steps. Now, if I play this backwards, it makes even more sense. How can we speak about what we're passionate about, what we're great at, if we don't value what we do and we can't articulate that? How do we articulate that if our energy is off? We're saying one thing, but we mean something else. People smell that from a mile away. And how do we do all of that if we're not sure which stories to tell? People always think there's just one story, a signature story, but actually we are multifaceted. So how can we do that if we don't share the right story for the right job? So the right tool for the right job. And then, well, how can we impact the world, the people around us, create change if we're not sure how to make that impact? in a great way, which takes us back to then how can we convey the vision that we have, whether it's in your first 100 days, whether it's in you've been brought into an organization to make a change, tough changes or otherwise, whether it's you've decided to be entrepreneurial and let people know about something. If we don't have a vision, it's like getting in a car and saying, I'm going to go, I don't know, somewhere in the UK. I don't know where, you know, is it north, south, east, west? Is it Scotland? Is it Newcastle? Is it London? Is it Cornwall? If we don't know where we're heading towards, that can have us flailing and our ability to be visible can be really difficult. Our messaging's off. We don't know what to say. We don't know how to like really make a stand for ourselves. And this is something that I see more in Black and brown people too, because often they're being pulled from pillar to post. They're trying to fit a narrative, or they're trying to fit in, or they're trying to placate people around them. I'm not the angry Black woman, honest. You know, there's so much for them to do. It can pull them in lots of different places. So hopefully that all makes sense in terms of the vibes.
It does. It sounds great. But as you're going through it, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. But I'm also thinking, I can understand why people work with you, because it there's a lot in there, isn't it? It's really, really complex.
Yeah.
And I know that you practice what you preach. So you're in the middle of a sprint at the moment. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, sprint or a marathon. So I've done this before. In February 2023, for reasons that I perhaps will go into maybe, I decided that I was going to consistently go live this time on my personal Facebook profile, because professionally it didn't faze me, and I was going to do it for 365 days, and I did. Weirdly, you know, I then people kept saying to me, "Oh, you're going to keep going?" I was like, "No way." And then only a few months later, after doing a round of confidence on camera, one of the attendees said, "I feel like I want to go out there for 365 days." And I said, actually, I fancy doing it again too. So we asked a few people in that group, and 10 of us decided we're going to go out and do 365 days. Now, some people decided Monday to Friday. I decided this time I'm going to do it on my professional page and on LinkedIn and on YouTube simultaneously. And then I felt a bit guilty about leaving Instagram out. So I do another one. So I'm actually doing it twice. For a year. I'm such a glutton for punishment. But here's why I did that. I did it because it is like a marathon. You will hit a wall. You'll wonder what to say. You'll feel some way when you go live for 3 or 4 days and nobody watches you and you feel like you're talking to yourself. I did it because when I ask people to be consistent for 12 days, I understand how challenging that can be for some people. And I needed to do something that would challenge me. And I wanted to make a promise to myself that I kept. It doesn't matter whether people are watching or not. So I'm currently on day, and I've been writing it down in the diary. I think I've done a miscount, but I'm actually on day 59 today. I've done my things, having already done a year before. So I'm on day 59 today, and I will stream at either 10 a.m., 2 p.m. or 10 p.m., depending on what's going on in my diary. So I do it because I don't ever want to invite people to step into a level of visibility that I wouldn't do myself. You know, it's my kind of comfort zone. But along the way, I get to share some really great stuff and I get to meet some really great people too.
Brilliant. So you're on LinkedIn as Jenny Kovacs.
I'm Jenny Kovacs, in brackets, the queen of being seen. People will find me. I'll share a link if you'd like to. And what I would say is, if you are on there, there's two things that I invite you to do. Don't follow me, connect with me, and don't worry about sending me a message. Some people go, oh, but I need to send a message. Just hit the connect button. And unless there's something really like untoward that you're sharing, I'll always connect with you. Send me a message and let me know that you've met through this podcast. I'm always curious about where you come from. I'm basically on everywhere online, but I reckon LinkedIn is where I'm most active. Some people prefer Facebook. They like to segment their life, professional or personal. But I'm on Facebook professionally as the Queen of Being Seen there. Jenny Kovacs, the Queen of Being Seen. You can find me there too. But what I am really focusing on, like 14 years in, is I want to actually grow my YouTube channel. So there is a video being officially put out there every day and some parts in between. So I'm just asking people, if they find me on there, please subscribe and, you know, say hello, comment, say hi.
Great. And we'll pop all of those contacts in the show notes. And the podcast is also on YouTube. So I'll see if there's some fancy way that we can connect the two up as well. So yeah. That'd be great as well.
I'll be talking about it. And this is something else, I guess, kind of Billy bonus that I want to share. I think as speakers, we can sometimes be in our ego about speaking, presenting, sharing, podcast hosting. I will tell people that I'm on this podcast. I will share it far and wide. There's no ego for me, because what serves you serves me. Like, let's get it out there. So if you are ever invited to speak, and as long as you're able to, and this is not necessarily you, but anyone else as well, make sure that in the run up before that you tell people that you're about to speak, not the day before, not the night before. And I know it's nerve wracking. What if I mess it up, or what if I bomb? But tell people as much and as far in advance as you can. Like, give some credit to the people who are working hard and putting everything together and, you know, getting bums on seats. Let people know during the time. I often, to much people's amazement, will stand at the back of a busy room and do a quick 60-second video. I'm at such and such and I'm doing this and I can't wait, and I'll let you know how you can find it. And keep sharing afterwards as well. You know, you've got this podcast, and why would I keep you a secret? You know, I want to share it with you. There are things that, not even in this episode, but there are things in previous episodes that you've shared that are so juicy for people. So if you are speaking, whether it's online, in person, on a stage, at a conference, get into the habit of sharing before, during and afterwards. It really serves the world in a much bigger way.
Brilliant. Jenny, thank you so much for your tips and your wisdom. And I'm sure people will take a lot from this session. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed that episode of Black All Year. It would be great if you could subscribe and review, because not only will it make sure that you get the content, but it'll help other people to find it too. Take care.